Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Text Message with me, Nate Langston.
And me,
Ian Morris. We had a nice little chat before the show started recording about working 3 to 4 days a week in the office. Ian's 3, I'm 4. Are you 5?
I think we'll be 5 before too long. I can see it coming. They're not going to let this carry on, are they?
People giving
flexibility to work at home.
I actually had a dream last night that I was made redundant by Bloomberg.
Oh, really?
And it was quite terrifying. And my good friend and colleague, Olivia Solon, was in charge of our team, even though I'm not on that team at the moment anymore. So it was a very bizarre dream, all things considered. But hopefully not a prophecy, because I like my job.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to be made redundant either.
No.
I mean, even though it would allow me to spend 5 days a week at home, it wouldn't allow me to have a home.
Well, speaking of having a home, story one here. I'm filing this, Ian, under throw unknown AI at a problem, wait, profit. And I'll preface this by saying, do you remember that Welsh chap who wanted to get permission to dig through a landfill in Wales to find a hard drive? Well, good. I thought you did, because we have talked about this a few years ago. Well, he's back in the news. The BBC reported this week that James Howells, who spent the last decade trying to find said discarded hard drive, reportedly containing 8,000 Bitcoin, that's the reason there, now plans to use AI to locate it. Spoiler alert, when I told Kate we were going to talk about this, she said, what kind of AI? And I said, exactly. Anyway, Mr. Howells, he said he accidentally threw away this hard drive 10 years ago. It was 2013, I think. It had 8,000 Bitcoin stored on it in a crypto wallet. At the time, they were worth a mere £4 million, which I think is pretty irresponsible. I can't throw a hard drive away thinking there might be something like an old text file on it that I'd want.
I have a cupboard full of hard drives, many of which have failed, but I still keep as an emergency thing.
Same. They're all in a little shoebox, well, quite a big box actually now, under our spare bed. Anyway, yeah. It was worth £4 million at the time he said he lost it. Now, I ran the numbers this morning through a handy little calculator, and as of today, his 8,000 Bitcoin would be worth just a hair over £250 million.
Wow.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot, and it is. But if you really want to feel the guy's pain, imagine you were in his shoes at Bitcoin's peak when that stash was actually worth closer to £400 million.
Oof.
Pounds. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I'm not being funny or anything here, but I would take £250 million.
Yeah.
That would be fine. I'd take 4 million. That would also be fine.
Yeah.
Not a greedy man.
Exactly, exactly. So you can see why this chap is keen to get permission to dig for it. Newport Council has continued to refuse an excavation at the site of the tip. And he's estimated he's estimated whereabouts the drive would be. I presume he means in terms of depth rather than, forwards or sideways, or what specific area it is, because he says he's calculated based on the height of the tip, based on the number of years that he thinks the drive has been sitting there. So what he wants to do is get about 100,000 tons worth of junk out of a total of 1.4 million tons, according to the BBC. And then he says, this is a quote, "I'd then take the landfill to a unit where it'll be placed on a conveyor belt and subjected to an AI scanning system. And if the AI recognizes anything that looks like a hard drive, it'll be flagged and removed."
Right, so he hasn't really got any sort of plan whatsoever then. This is all just absolute nonsense.
There are so many unknowns, and I respect the effort, because if I'd have thrown a hard drive that may have £250 million worth of crypto on it, I'd be doing exactly the same thing that he would be doing. Yeah, absolutely. 100% support his
effort.
I'd
be in bed crying.
Well, they're not mutually exclusive, but you might, during the cry, think of something like this as a way to do it. But I have a number of questions about this, despite respecting the effort. The first thing, why does the council object? to the tip, because he has promised to give a significant percentage of the total value over to the council to do work with, you know, and so we're talking tens of millions of pounds potentially, yeah. Which you'd think the council would say, okay, maybe. They say it's environmental issues and that it would cause problems environmentally, which may or may not be
quite right.
Quite possibly. But I would say that with that amount of money, you could probably offset them and do a hell of a lot more long-term good for the environment. But there we go. The second thing, and this is why I filed this under throw unknown AI at a problem, wait, profit, is this is a trend that I've noticed over the last year in particular, doing so much coverage of AI stuff, is that there is this general belief that any problem in the world previously insurmountable by human ingenuity can be overcome by applying AI to it. And that's just very, very, very rarely accurate. The AI systems and products, generally speaking, are not that good. So
no.
You would need something that is specifically tuned for this. And I'm just not sure that if you were putting a huge amount of waste produce on a conveyor belt, like some sort of perverted generation game, that you wouldn't be able to spot the hard drive if you just stood there and generally
looked through. It's going to be cake to nappies and other unspeakables. And, you know, like, sure, you could use machine learning to recognize things that look like hard drives. That's perfectly possible. But they would need to be visible, and they would need to be not covered in mud and dirt and nappies. So really, you're going to have to do so much legwork to get the things ready. You're already going to be able to spot the hard drive. And I mean, that's before we've even got to the point that I doubt that hard drive ever made it into the tip, because I think it would have been filtered out long before it was thrown in landfill.
I wondered that as well. I lean more on the optimistic side on his behalf, which is that it probably is in there. But would a hard drive that has been sitting in landfill for 10 years even be in a usable state if it could be recovered?
I think it would be possible. It would be possible to, if you were prepared to spend enough money on it, I'm sure you could recover what you need from it, potentially. I mean, it could be crushed pancake thin.
He doesn't think, you know, it is. I saw that mentioned in a story that there is a belief that it wasn't crushed. I don't know how you know.
I mean, because I mean, have you been to a tip, like a proper landfill, not a household recycling center, but like a landfill? It's done by driving heavy machinery all over it. I did it when I was at school, weirdly. We were doing a video project and we went to a tip to film, you know, and we probably wouldn't be allowed to do that sort of thing now as kids, but anyway, we did. And yeah, you know, it's tipper trucks and you know, Craney Army excavator things, and you know, they'll weigh a bunch, enough single-handedly to destroy a hard drive, let alone the waste on top of it, which, how many, so 10 years is it?
10 years.
So, you know, that's probably tons and tons of waste.
Yeah.
Which is all compacted down every time to get the most amount of space possible. It's swimming in fluids, obviously, because everything, you know, all the liquid drains out of everything and will have, you know, seeped down past the hard drive. I mean, you know, sure, it's possible it's in there. It's possible we could get it out and it would be okay. But the chances are astronomically small. And I'm sure that's why the council is like, no, actually, it doesn't matter if you're going to give us 20 million quid, because actually the fact is, you're not going to find it. You're going to promise us money. We're going to spend money on helping you, and we're never going to get a penny for it. So why would they take a punt on it? If I think if he came to them with a 20 million cash offer up front, then maybe they might reconsider it. But at the moment, it's just a promise of nothing, isn't it?
And if you're correct and all of those things happened,
and I usually am,
hard drive, if it had happened and it was still in a state that you could plug it in and the disc would spin up and everything, which is a very big if, then 10 years of being sitting under what is presumably a lot of other electronic rubble has magnetic interference.
Yep.
And will have affected the magnetic properties of said spinning disc. That might mean that something as cryptographically secure as a crypto wallet is unlikely to be recoverable, even if you could get the disc spinning into a usable state. So I do find it hard to see how this could end up being anything other than a massive gamble.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So there's this reminds me of that story. Have you heard about the? So you've heard about the guy in the US who's got a similar problem in that his crypto wallet is stored on a thumb drive that's encrypted. It's a specifically designed cold wallet. And so I saw something, a guy called Ed Zitron or Zitron yep. or whatever. So he tweeted about it saying that the guy has been offered now. They think they've found someone who could hack into it and he's gone suspiciously quiet about it. I just wonder, like, you know, is he right? Did he have this many Bitcoin? Has talking about this become his entire personality? Is he just the guy that lost all that Bitcoin now and you know, he has to keep coming up with these wackadoodle ways of finding it, like using AI, otherwise he's no longer in the news cycle?
I don't think so. And I think he does know. He works in IT. And I generally think that people who work in IT and adopted cryptocurrency very, very early would at least be on nodding terms with the technology to the extent that he would know if he actually had it or not.
Yeah.
Or if he'd have sold it or used it. There was a guy I interviewed quite a few years ago when I was writing a story for Business Week where it was very tragic. His son was a very, very early adopter of Bitcoin, but his son died young in a plane crash. And the chap knew that he had a lot of Bitcoin at one point, but he didn't know if there was any left in his wallet. And if he didn't know, if there was any left, there was no guarantee how much. But he was like, you know, there could be anything from nothing to several million dollars worth of Bitcoin in this irrecoverable wallet that belonged to his deceased son. And that is, in a way, to me, would be easier to get over in terms of a financial loss, because you could at least pretend.
Yours, right?
Well, I suppose, but I mean, you could always pretend that, well, it was very likely that your son had spent it. Whereas this chap is adamant that he had 8,000 Bitcoin, they were on a hard drive, and that hard drive is in a tip in Newport, which is even harder to get over, I would say.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I actually have at least some empathy for the guy, although how he managed to make this mistake. I mean, you say he remembers how much he's got. Why didn't he remember which hard drive it was on when he discarded it?
That goes back to our earlier question, which is that it just seems bizarre. Like I'm, and I'm sure you are as well, very careful about throwing away anything that might possibly have some usable data in future. Because I don't even trust myself with deleting files that I think will never be of interest in the future to me.
I'm sure I've told the story before about how I lost my dissertation for university and it, you know, probably the only copy because I made a stupid mistake upgrading Windows.
Were you the teenager in the Apple Mac advert in the 90s? It's like, it devoured my paper. The girl everyone thought was stoned.
Ellen. What's that? Was it Ellen?
Something like that.
Yeah. I really like that girl. I thought she was ace.
She was great. And it was a genuine customer. I remember writing about her at CNET. And she was a real student. She really did have it. And she was on sleeping medication. Not weed. Let me pull up a couple of comments that have come in while I've been talking here. Al came up with some novel suggestions for alternative ways to find this hard drive. One, giant cartoon style magnet to suck it up. Nope. Trained moles or rabbits to go with GoPros attached to their heads. Have you seen a rabbit try to fight through a load of discarded hard drives? That is a ripped paws situation. Wouldn't say that's environmentally friendly, but maybe that's part of the problem. Or more realistic, this: get a few interns and give them shovels. Yeah, I'd go for that. Kate,
that seems like the most proactive idea.
Kate says, this is possibly a stupid question because I don't know anything about Bitcoin, but do you not get any kind of receipt or something when you buy them?
Well, you do, don't you? That's
sort
the,
of.
The chain itself is that, the receipt.
Exactly. The receipt is the record on the blockchain. But unfortunately, you then store the actual coins themselves on a hard drive. You don't have to. You can store them in an online wallet or things, but you can store them in a hard drive. And
that in itself is often problematic.
Yeah. And so you can... The record is there to say, yes, you have them, they are legit. But if you've stored them on drive and you've lost the drive, then it doesn't matter if you can prove you've got them. You haven't physically got them. So it's difficult.
Yes.
It's very
exactly
difficult.
Exactly that. I mean, and there is a decent amount of Bitcoin out there that is similarly unaccounted for. You know, that these are coins that are mined and are in existence technically.
Yeah.
But they're many of them are probably lost.
The easiest way to think about it in terms of physical comparison, and it's not a perfect analogy, but it is the same as saying you bought something made of solid gold and you've got the receipt, and the company that you bought it from also has a copy of the receipt, and there's no denying that you bought it and that you have it, but you threw it in landfill.
Yeah, so it's no good to you without the gold.
It's no good to you if you haven't physically got the gold, even if no one's disputing that you had it. So it's challenging.
I mean, I mean, that's true. And I mean, yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I suppose you could make the point that if sort of the blockchain was run by somebody, which obviously it isn't because that's not how it works, you could say, well, all right, after 8 years or whatever, we'll, you know, you've got that, we know you bought it, so we'll, I don't know, do something. But it's not a bank or a company, you know, it's a peer-to-peer service, so there's not really any way to do that. Plus, you know, it helps the fundamental infrastructure for there not to be people taking money out of Bitcoin.
Kate says it seems flawed, but it's not like real gold.
But very astutely captured the whole crypto industry. Really,
it is.
Seems flawed,
but it's currency in a sense. It is valuable because people agree it is valuable. Therefore, if you have a thing and everyone agrees it's worth an amount, then
like
it is
diamonds,
worth an amount. So
only valuable because people seem to think they are, not because they are actually valuable. And, even though diamonds have some use,
and De Beers basically just tells you how much it's worth.
Yeah. So, they're good for cutting things, but, you know, I...
Yes. Speaking of cutting, this is where the story ends.
Adverts, Nate.
No, thanks.
I know, and I'd like to talk about them because they're getting on my goat. I got very angry writing all these bits. I was telling the live chat before we started recording that I was angered by these stories. What we're calling the Morris Medley this week. It's a collection of four short stories, all sort of related through a sort of a trend of advertising. So first up, Disney Plus now has an ad-supported tier.
Woo-hoo.
Like Netflix. Woo! It will cost $4.99 a month and offer HD streams. But Disney has also changed the standard version, which now costs the same as it did before, but no longer has 4K or Dolby Vision or Atmos. They're all locked behind a much more expensive option, which is now $10.99 a month. The standard service is $7.99 for just HD and Dolby 5.1. Nate, are you a Disney Plus subscriber?
I have a Disney Plus account.
Me too.
But, and I have accounts to lots of them, although I have one that I consider a floater, which is I subscribe to something for a month and then I move it to a different one the next month. Things like, Discovery Plus Paramount Plus, which is the one I have at the moment because Frasier's on it. But
yeah, Frasier's good, actually. I've been enjoying that.
And yes, I have those, and there's another conversation as to why I do it that way, but that's for another day. Disney Plus used to be the really great value one, and it still is relatively good value, but it's now very confusing. And this is a UK thing, right? Because I think they've done this in the US before.
It's difficult to keep track of it, so let's not muddy the waters of our American friends. If you're in America, you would be very welcome to email us and tell us what the situation is. But yes, I mean, it seems to me that if an ad tier is going to launch, it tends to launch in the US first because they're very receptive to advertising for some reason.
We've got several options now for ad-supported stuff in the UK, and I find it strange. I think it's good because it opens up the value to people with less money, but it did feel like this whole streaming system was a lovely antithesis to having ads in anything, and that now it's
that was the point.
It's
yeah.
not.
Well, for me, I mean, I don't enjoy live TV because of advertising. That's the simple reason. That and the fact that I have to be somewhere at a specific time. which annoys me because of the inflexibility. But yeah, I mean, adverts are painful. They cause me great pain. Actually, there's a fifth story that I didn't mention that I'll just shoehorn in now. YouTube's gone all guns blazing on advertising recently. So my I use Ghostery on my computer. Mostly not for ad blocking, I have to say. It's more about security and making sure that weird stuff isn't allowed, you know, to show me things. But anyway, the other thing it does very well is it dismisses those cookie pop-ups. It automatically doesn't consent to them for you and they go away. It's fantastic. Like, it's worth having just for that. Anyway, so YouTube just stopped working for me, and I was very disappointed, but they fixed it within 24 hours because YouTube's really in a big fight at the moment to stop people from blocking ads.
Yeah.
Anyway, shall I go to story two? Have you said everything you wanted to say about Disney?
No, I had just one other thing to point out, because I did look up this story on Campaign about ad-supported streaming stuff. And about
Fast, free ad-supported television.
Oh, very good. And according to a survey that was done, the UK, 63% of British adults are open to ads in exchange for free streaming content. So that's for people who don't want to pay anything. So they're going in that direction, right?
I would personally, and I mean this, and we'll get to this as well in our fourth Morris Medley component. I would gladly pay for a lot of things because I am just so sick of advertising. I'm sick of seeing things that are of no relevance whatsoever to me, things that I would never buy, and you know, it just gets my goat. Anyway,
41% of people in this poll were open to ads in order to get cheaper access to a platform. So that's a good portion. I'll put a link.
Well, they must
to this
have done
survey.
Their research, right?
Yeah. Who? I mean, Campaign's pretty good. But I'll put a link to this in the show notes. You know where to find that. Anyway, on with the Morris Medley.
Yes. So Paramount Plus has stopped working for me. I inserted this because I was on Twitter whinging about it. So I use Pi-hole, which is an ad blocking. But it's more than that as well. Again, it's a security thing. It stops things from, you know, accessing you. You know, you don't want to see things that are malware on the internet, and Pi-hole mitigates a lot of that. But as part of it, it comes with a list of blocked things, and one of them is something called Telium, a customer data platform, which is now owned by, big surprise, Adobe. But Paramount Plus uses it. So now I can't stream anything on Paramount Plus. It just does not work. I thought they had a problem, but they didn't. It's my problem. So my choice is either to accept this insidious data tracking, which I don't want to, or not watch Paramount Plus. So, I mean, I don't pay for it because it's part of a Sky subscription. But even so, it's part of a Sky subscription. I think it's perfectly legitimate to want to watch it without being tracked in a way that you... I mean, obviously you have to consent to it because you're not given any choice. But, like, you know, leave me alone, please. Can I just not be allowed to watch things without this... I don't mind if they track if you can still do it when you block it. You know, if for me, it seems like they should say, okay, well, that's blocked. But even so, it's a customer. Let's allow them to watch the thing they're a customer of.
And have you looked through the terms of service? Is there some line in there that says, I'd just be interested if there's something in there that specifically refers to this or something.
You're right to mention it. It probably does. I could look it up.
I just wonder if it's in there that, you know, you agreed to having this as a prerequisite to the service even working, even if you're paying for it. I'm not saying that that's a good thing, but I wonder if it's in there, and if it isn't, does that give you a right to raise it as a complaint? I mean,
there'll be some woolly like language that enables it, I'm sure, and it won't necessarily be completely clear. I've got the terms and conditions up. I'll have a look at some point.
Annoying. And but, just before we move on, anything you're going to do about this?
Well, there's not much I can do. I mean, I could whitelist Telium, but I don't see why I should. I don't particularly want to. I don't, even if it was important to me that I watch Paramount Plus, I still don't particularly want to give access to that to the rest of my stuff. I don't want it tracking me around the web. I don't, you know. So Realistically, no. Do you know what doesn't have any tracking?
Go on.
Torrents.
Well, that's...
I mean, but, you know, I mean, what's the argument in that... I mean, obviously there is a legal argument that torrenting things is bad, immoral, whatever, illegal. But I've already got a license to watch those programs, presumably, included as part of my subscription.
I think with torrenting, the difficult thing is the seeding things back. And
I get that.
And
I do get
if
that.
It was just you acquiring it, that's different. You know, I have a rather handy tool that lets me download copies of things from streaming services if I wanted to, and no one's losing out because I have to have an account with those services in order to do that. But torrenting,
maybe that's the way I should do it then. Install that somewhere remote on a box somewhere. Strip out the DRM, download the file, watch the thing, delete the thing, go about my life. But why do I have to dance this stupid dance?
Because it's 2023 and everyone wants to spy on you.
Yeah, well, that's I why. Don't want to be spied upon. And I also think, you know, like, here's a law, if that, you know, with the online thingy bill going through, here's a law that would have made sense. If you're going to track people, it should be written next to the price. So we, you know, your service costs you $8.99 a month, plus we collect the following data and sell it to blah, 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 or use it in this way. If they had to do that, I think they'd give it some second thoughts, wouldn't they?
I think they might. Maurice Medley, anyway. Item three. I'm liking this format, by the way. It's very good.
It's quite good. It's keeping things going, right?
Yeah.
Good news, Nate. If you're in the EU, you can now pay for Facebook. But Facebook and Instagram without ads, that's what you're paying for. So the idea behind this is that the law, obviously, in the EU is different to everywhere else. They're much more pro-consumer there and making sure people are looked after. So you can now subscribe to a monthly thing with Meta and get access to Facebook and Instagram without any ads.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not the biggest Facebook user. I have an account because I had one for work and I kept it and joined a bunch of like car chats because it's useful to ask people for advice when you've got an older car. So I've kept Facebook around for that, and I do enjoy the occasional Instagram scroll.
Yes.
From time to time.
And let's not forget, Ian is on TikTok.
I am on TikTok, yeah. Yes. Although I'm finding TikTok a bit of a struggle again at the moment because it's full of people selling stupid blackboards that light up and things.
Yeah, well, they know they're talking to somebody who spends part of his disposable income on X studio clocks. So if anything, you'd say it's working. But we'll come back to TikTok another day because I have a big point to make about that. But on the Meta thing, the reason why we're mentioning this in text message is because this isn't happening in the UK. This
yes.
is both a, I mean, you could say, is it a benefit to Brexit? Is it not a benefit to Brexit? Of Brexit?
I think it would be nice to be offered the opportunity. It's $9.99 a month.
I think it would be,
by the way,
a very
Euros.
Good thing. Yeah, I think it's too expensive, but if it was wrapped into this whole verified thing that you also don't get ads, that would be very compelling. I don't use Facebook. I don't have an account, but I do use Instagram a few times a week. I'm not a big user of it. And I see in the live chat here, Kate says, I would pay for no ads on Meta. I think it's a good idea. Facebook doesn't, Meta doesn't really want to do this, as far as I'm aware. They're doing it kind of because they have to, because
yes.
they were told by courts that they need to. So this is something they're doing, and I think it's more than just the EU. I think it's like the European
Economic Area around Switzerland. Yeah.
So it's like Liechtenstein and Switzerland and a couple of others, but it's quite a lot. Kate says $10 is too much. $5.99. I think £5 for ad-free anything is a good price.
Well, this is my argument with YouTube. Okay, so going back to the previous point about them sort of wanting to put an end to ad blockers, I'm actually fine paying for YouTube. I get a lot of value out of it. I would find no ads extremely useful. I enjoy YouTube. Great, you know, lots of great creators. I will not pay for YouTube Music in any form. Do a subscription that does not include YouTube Music. I'm not going to pay for it. Okay, just anyone from YouTube listening, that's my statement. That's a hill I will die on.
This came up on Daily Tech News Show on Friday, which I was guesting on, and I was asked what I thought about the whole Google ad blocking thing. And I said I'm not a big enough YouTube user to want to pay whatever it is, £10 a month or something, for YouTube's premium service. But if they brought the price down to about a fiver,
£5,
I reckon, yeah, I would pay it, and it would encourage me to use YouTube more.
Which they could easily do if they just unbundle their stupid music service.
Yeah.
It's hot garbage, mate. Nick, you should try it sometime just to see how bad it is.
Nick in live chat says, I'd rather they paid me for being subjected to their ads. I think the balance is...
I mean, that's also a fair point.
they are paying. You're both paying each other. You're paying them by letting them use you. It's the way it works.
Yes. And I mean, the return per subscriber, you could argue it could be a fiver a year and they'd still make more money out of you subscribing than they would on ads. I do hear a lot of people sort of suggest that bandwidth is expensive. It's not. Electricity is expensive and they do have to have a lot of servers. I mean, YouTube is an unbelievable service in a lot of ways. I mean, you know, yes, people are uploading garbage to that site every minute of every day in the hundreds of thousands of hours per minute kind of way.
Yeah, in 4K.
In 4K.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I mean, what, on the one hand, it's incredible because it will provide future societies with an incredible look at ours, assuming they can keep the servers running. But, you know, it is a collection of quite rubbish. I mean, some of this stuff is not viewed by anyone. But even so, it's a technological marvel. I always think that about Facebook. You know, the technology behind Facebook must be remarkable because it's storing such an incredible amount of data. Yeah. Anyway,
well,
that's unrelated.
I think it's a little bit like with Spotify. Most, like, the most... I'm making these numbers up, but they told me at one point that something like 90% of the streams of all of Spotify are something tiny like 1% of the library or something nuts like that. So you just store the 1% that accounts for most streams in RAM or on the fastest memory, and the rest is in essentially slower storage. So it's, and I think Meta does something similar, particularly with images and videos.
They had a Blu-ray thing I don't know if it ever went to full trial or to full service, but basically what they did was anything that hadn't been seen for a while, they'd just archive it to Blu-ray. And then I guess what they used it for is, you know, like when you get memories on Facebook or whatever, I guess because it's scheduled in advance, I guess it goes and gets that data from a slow storage format and then presents it. That said, hard drive storage has become much cheaper, and so it's probably, you know, they're probably just adding terabytes a day to it.
That's
and
weird.
Eating the cost.
Well, one of our, I won't say the name just in case, in our live chat right now says, I got YouTube Premium using a VPN, so it costs £2 a month using an address in a foreign country.
Pretend to be Argentinian.
Did not know that was a thing, but.
It works well with services like YouTube. Other services less so, because obviously you'd have a local library in a lot of cases. It also used to work with Tidal, where you'd get a Tidal subscription for like $2 a month or something. Mm. I mean, again, it's useful if you wanted to have high quality, but you'd sort of keep a Spotify subscription as well, so that you could, you know, not... Mm. Just be a leech, as it were. But anyway, I don't do any of that. It's just too much effort.
The final item in your Morris medley before we move on.
Well, it's related, because you'd mentioned that you were bothered by this and I wanted to see how you were finding search engines, because I think we can both agree that Google as a search engine has become virtually useless in many ways.
Yeah, I do. I think I found that I cannot find what I want anywhere near as easily as I used to be able to. It feels like sometimes the top result it might be what I'm looking for if it's something very specific. But if I'm doing research, and as a journalist, I would say I spend the vast majority of my time, editorially at least, doing research, it's almost unusable because all the results are weird websites of domains I've never heard of. It looks like content farming. Whether it is or not is another question, or it's lists, or it's just a lot of duplicate nonsense. It's really bad.
If you do a search for, and this isn't, I mean, it kind of is. It If you do a search for, say, you know, is a Doctor Who renewed or something like that, you'll get, you know, a list of stories. I did it for John Wick. I watched all four John Wick films, had a roaring time, thought this is great. After four, would there be another one? And I did a little search and had to wade through unbelievable amounts of waffle from sites like Radio Times, you know, when will John Wick 5 be released? And then 3,000 words, none of which is the answer to, is there going to be a John Wick 5? No. Until you get like three quarters of the way down the page and it reveals what you actually already knew, that not yet, but you know, yeah. Anyway.
It's same with these how to watch this, how to watch that.
Yeah.
It's like, well, is it, unless this answer on this webpage is anything more than load Apple TV Plus and press play on it, then it really doesn't
need to. My favourite one is, well, when I worked at Future, one of the top stories was how to watch something in order. I can't remember what it was, but it was on Tech Radar and it just did unbelievable traffic. So it proves that it works.
Oh, this
but
is it. Yeah, surely it works.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, they wouldn't do it otherwise. But one of them was like, I think it was something like how to watch the Marvel movies in order or something. And I was like, Disney Plus literally presents you them in order. It's like all you have to do is go to the service and watch them in order.
There are some like that where they're offering an alternative order that's like in universe canon or something. But presumably, yeah,
very
that's
true.
That's not for most of them.
And absolutely. And you know, actually, to do a story like that requires some real skill because you've got to really understand the universe and and it might be you watch a TV series in between two movies and stuff like that. I have some respect for that because actually it's not just press play. You know, it's not a farming operation. It's actually for people who would like to see things how they are in chronological time rather than in the order they were released. I can sort of get on behind that.
John in live chat says that he tends to use ChatGPT Plus as Google now. Which,
I mean, that's fine. I mean, presumably if you're asking it to present you with links, it's not unreliable for that.
Yeah, I've tried these things, and I've tried Bing's, which, you know, is based on ChatGPT, and it works relatively well in terms of getting you what you want, but it's a slog because you're having a conversational interface. It's like talking to one of those phone tree menus that when you're on hold,
oh, God.
Press one for this, press three for that. I'm just waiting. That's not good enough either.
I don't know if we want to add what is probably now a sixth thing to the Morris Medley.
I
cancelled my Virgin subscription, and that was a mission.
Right.
It took 6 hours.
We'll return to that, because that sounds like an extra message narratively yeah. presented. I've enjoyed this Morris medley.
Maybe we'll bring it back.
I think we could.
Well, it's always the things we accidentally stumble into that end up being, you know, long-lasting features.
Yeah. Well, let us know any thoughts you have on any of the sub-components of the Morris medley or anything else we've talked about today or anything you'd like us to talk about tomorrow. That is the figurative tomorrow. Tomorrow is Monday. I'll be at work. So, well, Ian, we won't be podcasting then, but you knew what I meant, and it was facetious of you to present otherwise. I'd like to thank our patrons for supporting us. We have had a few new patrons this week, which, of course, naturally, I have been unable to load because the page will not load while we're live, but you know who you are and you will get thanked by name next week. But thanks to everyone like Nick and John and Al and Ken and Mike and Nick, people in the chat who are supporting us. You are the best. And all of those people not only got two extra messages this week, one from Ian, one from me, but you're also going to hear the third story that we do every week. This week, though, does the PC versus Mac debate feel a bit old now? Well, that's going to do it for this week. I strongly advise people who aren't patrons who are thinking about it to become one and go and listen to this week's episode, because if you like arguments about PC versus Mac, or rather if you liked having them 15 years ago and wish they'd come back, then did we just spend 15 minutes talking about why that would be such a fantastic use of all of our time? Otherwise, we've got extra messages coming up later this week. I should remind that it's actually Ian's turn to do it again. Because he does tend to do the first in the month. Yes, I know. I thought that might be a surprise to you, but it is technically...
Well, no, I mean, it's fine.
So that's...
I don't know what I'm going to do. Oh, you said... Yeah, I do. Yeah, you just suggested one, didn't you?
I did. It's right there in the past. Right. Otherwise, we'll see all of you for another week in the future. Another podcast, that is, in the future. Bye.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.